This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Don't miss your window of opportunity. Upgrade your space now during Blinds.com's anniversary sale and save up to 50% site-wide. Blinds.com. Elevate your windows with the number one online retailer of custom window treatments. Blinds.com offers hundreds of premium window treatment options. Choose from woven wood and Roman shades to blinds, motorized shades, and more. All designed to fit your budget without sacrificing quality. Blinds.com brings the showroom to you with free virtual consultations and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Our design experts can help schedule a professional measure and installation, plus guidance for DIYers too. Blinds.com has been trusted for 29 years, earning thousands of five-star reviews. Shop with confidence, knowing you'll get upfront pricing, no hidden fees, and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. But hurry, these savings won't last. Shop Blinds.com's anniversary sale happening right now for up to 50% off site-wide. Save up to 50% site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM, but don't forget, Odyssey Sports is giving you a chance for a slam dunk in Vegas. Download the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. Log in and listen to 92.9 FM ESPN for at least 1 hour each day, and you are automatically entered for your daily entry into a chance to win a trip for you and three friends to Las Vegas to go with a five-night stay at the Circa, free airfare round trip, and $5,000 spending cash for you and each of your friends, so $20,000 in total. Again, all you have to do is listen 1 hour each day on the Odyssey app. Dennis Fuller producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My co-host, he is, as he is every Tuesday and Friday, is the host of VSiN's College Football and Basketball Betting Podcast, the VSiN Betting Tailgate Show, airing Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central Time, VSiN Primetime on weeknights. Download the VSiN Watch app to keep up to date with everything happening over at VSiN, on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
What's up, man? It's good to be on. It's good to be rocking and rolling.
Good to have you with me. This is when Mark used to say Jeffrey went full, like full rabbit hole for me. I've done a lot of research here over the last 90 minutes, and there's a couple of things I want to discuss with you. Number one, are we seeding the tournament correctly? Because I think that's an interesting question. We now have 5 years of data of the NCAA tournament seeded with the net. So there are a few things that I wanted to point out to you, see if you care at all. You think it's an outlier or whatnot, but it's a theory that I've had, and I want to pick your brain on it. Also, another topic hot in the streets is your NBA record against the good teams. I've done some research, Tim. Turns out most teams that are playing the elite, like there's three really good teams that beat everybody, and then everybody else kind of loses to when they play those teams. I hope everyone was sitting down for that. So I wanted to get into that as well. Then we're going to talk some NFL draft. Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic is going to join the program. He's up in Indy. We'll get his thoughts on all the quarterback drama that is going on. We're going to ask simply, is this a good draft? What's the feeling around Matthew Stafford? Get the buzz in the scene up in Indy. Then we will get into the list. Jim Tanner going to be the UNC general manager. I have some questions about that. We'll discuss that during the list. Then we'll get into tonight's college basketball slate, see what Tim's got fired up on the card. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But again, I wanted to start with this premise, Tim, because spirit of full disclosure, I've been talking with Giannotto, and he is writing a story eventually about the analytics that have come into the selection process for the NCAA tournament. And I believe he's spoken with Bart Torvik. He's spoken with Kim Pomeroy, amongst others. And my working theory, and see if you buy this. My working theory is that as we've gotten into the age of the net and paying more attention to analytics, I think we're getting the right 68 teams in at a higher frequency. But what I'm not convinced of is that we're seeding them properly. Are you with me there?
I want to hear more from you. Continue.
Okay. All right. So if you go and you look, we've had five tournaments. So the net comes into play after the 2018 season. So the very first tournament that we had was 2019, seeded by the net. So that's five tournaments because we obviously did not have a tournament during 2020. Historically, if you look at the better seeded teams, so when I say the one seed, the eight seed, five seed, four seed, six seed, three, seven, two, in their opening round matchups in the past 5 years, every seed has underperformed its first round matchup versus the historic rate at which they were winning. So for instance, 1 versus 16s, they're 19-1. That's a 95% win percentage. Historically, before that, I'm counting from 1985 on because that's when we start with the 64 teams. 135-1, 99.26%, a difference of minus 4.26%. 8-9s. 8s are 7-13 the past 5 years, a 35% win percentage. Historically, eight seeds were 68-68, 50%, so down 15% over that time. The 5 seed taking on the 12 seed, they are 12-8 over the past 5 tournaments. That's a 60% win percentage. They were 89-47 prior to that, 65.4%, so down 5%. Then we get into the 4-13s, 15-5 over the last 5 tournaments, 108-128, that's a down 4.4% again. The 6-11 games, 10-10 over the past 5 tournaments, 85-51 prior to that, down 12.5%. This is the one seed that has exceeded expectations over that time frame. 3 seeds are 18-2, 90% win percentage. Historically, 115-121, that is a improvement of 5.4%. 7 seeds against the 10 are 12-8. 84-52 historically, that's down 1.76%. And 2 seeds against the 15, 17-3 over the last 5 tournaments, historically 128-8, down 9.1%.
So your point is
we're misseeding.
Well, I mean, all right.
I'm actually exploring more than I am. But the initial,
were we misseeding Purdue, who won the Big Ten and won the Big Ten tournament because they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson?
No.
Okay. So can we throw the one seed out? I don't. Are we misseeding the ones?
Probably not.
I'll give you an example of one that I think we've talked about on this show in 2021. Because Loyola of Chicago was adored by the analytical folks, but they were an 8 seed. And then they faced Illinois in the second round, and they beat Illinois in a game. I think they were like a 2-point underdog. So I don't know if they were misseeded. based off of resume, being in a weaker conference than Missouri Valley in 2021, because the analytics love them. And this year, for example, Gonzaga, who lost again over the weekend, I don't understand the advanced numbers love and infatuation with Gonzaga. Gonzaga is a team that is right now 11th in KenPom, 10th in the net. They have two quad one wins, including one coming on November 4th on a neutral site against a Baylor team that is now going to be, what, an 8 or 9 seed? So that's one of those things where I don't know what to do with them, because I think all the bracketologists have Gonzaga as like a 9 seed.
So if you're looking over the bracket matrix right now, Gonzaga and Baylor are basically both on the 9 seed
line. And that's Gonzaga's best win.
Correct.
So I guess to your point, if this was only based off of the net and KenPom, they would be a 3 seed.
Correct.
So I guess that's where I'm kind of pushing back a little bit on what's the perfect formula, right? Because I think KenPom and Bart Torvik and the net can be really helpful in a lot of aspects of looking at how these teams truly are playing out. And I know a team like Memphis, that I'm sure a lot of the listeners right now are furious with KenPom because they're way down, right? They're like 46 right now.
Now, it's also important to note, Memphis is kind of outperforming the net in terms of where they're projected to be seated.
Correct.
Because St. Mary's, who the net does like, they are basically on the exact same line as St. Mary's, and they have similar resumes, with the exception being St. Mary's's net rating is about 30 spots higher. But they're both kind of on that seven line.
So would you say that the point you're trying to make right now, are you saying that Memphis is being accurately looked at, or do you think a team like St. Mary's is being undervalued? What's kind of your... If we're misseeding this, I'm just curious which angle you're headed.
Okay, so
with this.
This year, I think, is an interesting case study, because what I actually think is happening this year is that the SEC primarily, but also the Big Ten, the SEC top to bottom had an unbelievable non-conference schedule, so their numbers are all elevated because of how they performed against the rest of the country. The Big Ten is top-heavy, but the top has performed pretty well. So basically, those two leagues are getting about double the teams in the top 20 that we would see compared to the years past. I'm kind of setting this year aside, because we'll see when it comes out. But my working theory is that what has happened is, because the metrics are out there, the metrics are actually influencing bracketology, and what I think is actually happening is that bracketology is influencing what the committee's doing, because they don't want to do anything that's like, whoa, this is blatantly wrong. Like, if you look at it, most of the arguments that we've had the last few years, it really hasn't been about seeding. What it's been about is one or two teams, and you and I kind of are in the same handful. It's like, hey, if you're going to be team number 68, like, win a few more games, and we'll talk then. But what I think is actually happening is we're giving too much credit to predictive metrics, and I think what's happening is we're kind of ignoring what's happening on the floor.
So would you like – I feel like if I'm understanding this accurately, do you want – how you're playing towards the end of the season to count a little bit more?
You've beaten to count.
Well, so I bring that up because Kansas beat Duke the Tuesday before Thanksgiving in Las Vegas.
Yep.
Arguably the best win in college basketball this year is owned by Kansas. The problem is Kansas kind of stinks right now, right? They're tied with Colorado late last night, a Colorado team that has, what, one win in the Big 12. They pasted Oklahoma State. Congratulations. But if you look at their last six games, they lost on the road to K-State, beat Colorado, got beat by Utah, blown out by BYU, and then beat two bad teams in Oklahoma State and Colorado. But they have an Iowa State win that's really helpful. They have a Duke win that continues to carry weight each and every day. So should how you're playing lately affect where you are from a seeding standpoint? And also, I bring it back to Gonzaga, right? We talked about them earlier in the show. Gonzaga right now has four losses in a average conference. They've lost to both games against St. Mary's. They lost a game to Oregon State. They lost a game to Santa Clara on their home floor. They lost to UConn. They lost to West Virginia. Their best win is Baylor right now, but they are perceived to be comfortably in the field, and I think some of that has to do with the fact that the analytic numbers absolutely love them. If you removed the name Gonzaga from their resume, are they a tournament team right now? 21-8, four losses in the WCC with a win over Baylor on a neutral and San Diego State on the road.
All right, let me see. All right. They would be 6-8 in quads 1-2, 15-0 in quads 3-4. I can already tell you, I know exactly why the metrics love them.
Because they blow teams out.
100%.
But this blow teams out and they don't get blown out.
But this is what's weird to me.
Like, why? And I know that Memphis has two quad three losses.
Yeah, this is really not stumping for the Tigers.
And I know it isn't, but let's just use that example, right? And now I'm kind of jumping in on your side a little bit here. Because I think Memphis, based off of most bracketologists, are higher seeded than Gonzaga, as they should be. Memphis is 22-5, 10-3 in the first two quadrants, and Gonzaga is 21-8 and 6-8 in the first two quadrants. But they don't have bad losses, and Memphis does have a couple of bad losses. So to me, it's a no-brainer that Memphis, what they've done so far, is better than Gonzaga. But right now, based off of the brackets, they're only one seat up on the Zags.
Well, what makes no sense to me is this. In every other sport, when you beat up on the bad teams, and we'll talk about this with the Grizzlies, we immediately flag you for being a fraud.
Indiana. Football.
Yeah. Oh, God, I was going to say, I was like,
can I just, this is a quick side point. If anyone out there, and I know they did this whole thing, and I think Seth Davis is like pro expansion of the field. Indiana and Arkansas right now are NCAA tournament teams. My case rests. We don't need his field expanded. Indiana and Arkansas have, I'm sure they have talent, and they've got really nice wins past couple of weeks, like the Arkansas win at Kentucky, very impressive. They're, what, 5-9 in the SEC? Maybe even worse?
Hang on. They got the Missouri win. They are 5-9. Yes.
Yeah, but they beat Missouri, very good win. They beat Kentucky, very good win. Outside of that, they had nothing in the non-con that was notable. No, they beat Michigan. That's not true. They beat Michigan. It's a very good win. If they're in the field, we don't need to expand this thing. Come on now. What are we doing?
Well, this is my question. Where is the expansion coming from? Because it seems to me, and you tell me if you think I'm off base, as the world shifts more to the Big Ten and the SEC, because they have more money than everyone, they can have the bigger roster, the better rosters, whatnot. Is it shifting to preserve the other leagues, or is it shifting so that we can get more Arkansas in? And I say this as an Arkansas stockholder.
Look, Arkansas fought hard for me this weekend. I appreciate
they were about the only ones that fought hard for me this weekend.
I don't know the answer to that, because we've got this horrendous product that Fox is going to try to put down our throats that's coming out to Vegas at the end of
March. Yeah, they have been plugging that hard.
Ugh. Like, who has any interest to watch? I mean, What are the conferences involved? It's all the Fox entities, right?
Yeah, I think it's Fox's response to the NIT, because the NIT is an ESPN property. I think it's like, I think that's kind of the other thing is, we as college sports fans are viewing this Cold War through the SEC and Big Ten, when I view it more as it's a Fox versus ESPN, because after Venue Sports, the OTP service that was going to have ESPN. Remember when they were talking about the streaming app that was basically going to be the sports fan app?
Yes.
Once that lost in court, Fox decided, all right, well, we're not even partnering with ESPN anymore. We're going to go do our own thing. Like, I think we're I think the Cold War is actually Fox versus ESPN and the family of networks.
So, by the way, for those of you who have yet to see it, it's called The Crown, and it's going to be played in Vegas. It's going to be a 16-team tournament of the Big East, Big Ten, and Big 12 teams that don't qualify for the NCAA tournament. Poop.
Well, my question is, why is the Big 12? I mean, the Big 12 has a deal with everybody.
Yeah, so I guess they get invited, but why wouldn't they want to go? I don't know. I mean, so you're looking at Villanova, Georgetown. Everyone else has a losing record. Like, are we going to get 11-17 DePaul? Yay. Can't wait for that. Look, I am historically as big of an NIT backer as there are, because I always thought it was important for the teams that played really well during the regular season, won their conference in the mid-majors, that they got some postseason that wasn't, you know, the CIT or whatever. And I thought that was kind of neat to see some of those teams make a run.
You put some respect on the CBI's name as well, by the way.
Ugh, man, this is...
Which one doesn't exist anymore? Is it CBI?
I don't know. One of them, like, wasn't even seeded. One went down to, like,
Florida. One you had to pay... No, one you had to pay to play.
I think the CBI you had to pay.
Pretty sure Pepperdine got to, like, the finals in that one year. see that money well... Money's well spent. But I guess this is kind of...
All right, get back to your point.
To a certain degree, I am kind of exploring. It's less of this is something that I believe, but this is also true. Half of the 11 seeds' Final Four appearances since 2010 have come in the last 5 years. Half of the 9 seeds' Final Four appearances have come in the last 5 years. The average historic seed for a Final Four team historically is 2.5, but the last 5 seasons it's been nearly 3.95. Now, I also think there's another possible explanation. The other possible explanation is we've had the talent diaspora. And we've seen this happen in college football, and I think now we're starting to see it happen in college basketball, and I think there's a reason why the Big Ten and the SEC are dominating right now in terms of bids. Those are the schools that have the most money. Those are the schools that have the best-funded rosters. And so rather than having a day and age in which basically a handful of schools – wink, winky, you know what we mean, cared about basketball. Now there are more people that care about basketball, and the talent is being dispersed. We probably don't have the top end. The best of the best is maybe not as good as it has been. It's flattened the field, and because of that, there's a greater chance for upsets early and for teams that are seeded improperly. But like to me, so I think there's also the argument like UConn. When UConn won its first title, like I was happy. I won every bracket pool I was in because I believed in that UConn team. They were a 5 seed.
So, are you talking about with Kemba?
No, the first Hurley. So was that 23? The 23 UConn team. Or were they a 4?
They were.
Hang on. They were a 4.
They beat St. Mary's in the second round. Yeah, they were in that 4-5 game. They beat Iona, and then they beat St. Mary's, and they went to Vegas, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they were a 4, and they beat Arkansas, and they beat Gonzaga. So my question to you is this, and maybe I'm cherry-picking, but you pointed out we've seen 11 seeds make a run. Was NC State underseeded last year? NC State, who made a run to the Final Four a year ago, lost their last 4 regular season games and then went and got hot in the ACC tournament, won all five games, got the auto bid, and were 11 seed. And then they just continued to ride that and made it all the way to the Final Four before losing to Purdue. Like, was that an underseeded team, or was that just a case of a team getting hot at the right time?
So I would say it was a team that underperformed, and then they did get hot. Like, there's no question the miracle in Greensboro is like a part of it, but they underperformed. That team was a good team. They were supposed to be good, and there's a reason why Keats was on the hot seat, and everybody was basically saying, if he doesn't win this tournament, he's getting fired. Because that team had been put together, but they didn't perform well. They kind of, to me, like, that is the richest of rich man's version, kind of like, of Ohio State this year, where that was a team that underperformed during the season, but then they got their opportunity and they were playing their best ball.
Well, I think UConn, you could say the same too as well. UConn in 23, I believe, had a 5-game losing streak in the middle of the year, right?
I can't remember if it was a 5-game or if it was like 5 out of 6.
5 out of 6. 5 out of 6. 7 out of 9.
Yeah, they had a stretch from the, like, basically New Year's Eve until the middle of January where they were not good.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, was Princeton underseeded 2 years ago when they were a 15 seed and went to the Sweet 16?
No, that's to me that you have to sometimes set aside an Arizona Tommy Lloyd coefficient. And, like, that guy freaks out on the side, man. Like,
I just want to point this out. I'm not here stumping for the committee. Yeah, you do it right, committee. Like, Kansas showing up on the four line when they revealed the top 16 seeds 2 weeks ago, I thought was a joke. Like, they definitely get things wrong. I just don't know. I'm not buying in on the tournament has been historically wrong based off of the analytics, because I could argue that the analytics pointed out in 21 that Illinois got screwed with their draw having Loyola in the second round.
No, I do think, though, I think the default is give credence to analytics, when I would much prefer give credence to on-floor wins and losses.
So also, where are you on... So here's the thing I don't like. I really... And this is what helps out the major conferences. And we talked about this 11 days ago on Valentine's Day regarding Memphis, right? The AAC is down this year, and AAC play, as you put... I thought astutely pointed out, is Valentine's Day,
oh, yes.
Which is just try to survive in advance. It's a lose-lose opportunity. What hurts me, or what I feel like is what hurts these conferences at times, is that when you go to the SEC tournament, if Arkansas makes a run to the SEC championship game, they're in. They just picked up 3 quad one wins in 3 days. Like, these conference tournaments can really help out these bigger teams, these bubble teams, because you're just getting an opportunity for a gluttony of quad one wins.
So where I am on that is, I guess we're kind of a little opposed. I have not seen in recent memory who was a team that was on the outside looking in that went and they did not win the conference tournament.
Okay. So that, because NC State was not a tournament team.
Right.
And then Georgetown was not a tournament team,
right,
in 21,
because
they both won their conference.
Typically what we've been seeing is that the committee is treating conference tournaments not necessarily meaningless, but this idea that you can go and right all the wrongs of your year by having getting to Saturday, that's not really held true. Because there have even been a couple examples. I think 1 year there was an A&M team that I think made it all the way to like Saturday or Sunday in the SEC tournament. Everybody like, oh, they're in. And then they got left out.
So,
I actually think that's the way it should be. I think those tournaments should be exactly what they are. It's a mulligan.
I think what the tricky part about those tournaments is, and if you're trying to make the point too, and I don't know if you are, trying to help out the little guy. Because right now, Arkansas and Indiana are among, in many people's eyes, some of the last two teams in. And if Drake or UC San Diego were to stumble in their conference tournament, maybe even VCU, they might be out. So are you trying to say that the mediocrity of an SEC team or whatever it may be should be overlooked? Because last year everybody was upset about Indiana State getting left out, right? That was the team that everyone was fired up about getting left out of the field. And I forget who the last team in won, whatever. I think it was it like Arizona State? Someone went to Dayton and absolutely, you know, bleeped the bed. And we're like, oh, they should have got in. Virginia.
So that is kind of, I think.
But also St. John's got left out last year too, and people thought they were going to get in.
And didn't they beat, that's another example of, I think they beat UConn. No, they didn't beat UConn. They played UConn tough, like on Friday of the conference tournament.
Yeah, they lost 95-90 at the Garden. And Ken, and here's another thing, kind of going against what you were pointing out. St. John's last year finished 21st in KenPom. They won their last five regular season games, beat Seton Hall by like 20, and then lost to UConn by five. Got the cover, no big deal, and then got left out. So they got hot down the stretch, but it was one of those things where
I think what
the losses just added up too much for them.
I think what's happening is the way that these metrics are working, the bad teams, if you're bad teams in a good league, are like the, if we're using the Arkansas example, like Arkansas is going to have the opportunity to stay in it simply because they play in a league that the numbers get inflated. And so what I think is happening is a lot of the middle to bottom parts of those leagues are getting an extra long look because simply because of the league they play in. It's not like they're winning the games, but it's because of the league. Like Oklahoma and Arkansas are kind of in the same thing. It's like until Arkansas had the Missouri win in conference play, they don't really have a great win. I think that's kind of what's happening a little bit too. All right, I bring all this up, though. So, of course, one of the topics du jour out here is the Grizzlies can't beat the good teams. And what does that mean? Well, I also took a look at this, Tim. Here are the teams that Cleveland has a losing record against. Atlanta, Boston, and Houston. Here are the teams that Boston has a losing record against. Atlanta, weirdly. Weirdly, Atlanta props up on both. Indiana, the Lakers 0-1, the Grizzlies 0-1, the Thunder 0-1, the Spurs 0-1. Here are the teams that the Thunder have a losing record against. The Mavericks at 1-3, and I believe all those games were with Luka prior to the trade, and the Warriors at 1-2. That's it. Teams that have a winning record, or here's the teams that have winning records against teams 500 or better currently. Cleveland, 22-6. Boston, 20-10. OKC, 21-10. Indiana at 14-12. The Lakers at 15-12. And Houston, 20-5. I bring all this to say, there's three teams that are just beating the crap out of everyone and nobody can beat them. Except for Atlanta, apparently.
And I think Atlanta's got like two losses to the Wizards this
year. Shout out, Marcus Smart played last night.
Yeah, how about the Wizards? I watch Wizards games not because I'm from that area.
No,
because
you have the under.
I have under, and they won again last night, much to my chagrin. They're playing Marcus Smart and Chris Middleton. I just assumed both those guys would be immediately released. I have no idea what the hell the Wizards are doing.
So maybe you hold on to their contract, like you play and hold on to them and try to flip them again. That's the only guess that I got. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk some NFL draft. We'll do that with Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic next. But before we do that, I want to remind you, of course, the best spot to get engaged and get your engagement ring is Robert Irwin Jewelers. I'm not just endorsing them. I am a customer myself. You get more choices at Robert Irwin Jewelers. They have an enormous collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes, and they can even make designing a custom-made engagement ring risk-free and easy with the Mint to Be guarantee. That means that for any reason, if you're unhappy with your custom-made engagement ring, you have a full 365 days to return it. It's not as daunting of a process as it sounds. You sit there and go, like, what do I know about jewelry? Why would I custom make it? Why wouldn't I leave it to the professionals? Here's what it really is. It's about having a ring that's unique to give to her. Nobody's worn it before, and the reality is they're putting it all together. All you got to do is come in with something as simple as a picture, a drawing, a design, anything that you can think of. They'll help you put that ring together and have a brand new, never worn ring before. Also, don't forget they have free ring sizing for life and free jewelry spa service for life as well. You can even ask her now and pay later with financing options like 24 months deferred interest, or you can take up 60 months to pay at a low APR. All right, Jewelers has been in the Memphis area for over four decades, and they are known for offering trusted treasures, timeless treasures, for generations of families. Visit the Diamond Showroom on Perkins, or the store in South Haven off Goodman Road, or the one in Bartlett at the Town Center. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You can also shop online, rijewelers.com. Nick Baumgartner next, right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for
in Dax's domain. We see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know.
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Nick Baumgartner writes about the NFL and the NFL draft for The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter on X at Nick Baumgartner. Also follow him on Blue Sky at nickbaumgartner.bsky.social. Kind enough to join us now. I guess, Nick, let's start right here. I'm a Giants fan, spirit of full disclosure, so obviously the quarterbacks are going to be near and dear to my heart. If Cam and Shador were in last year's draft, how would they stack up?
Oh, that is a great question. I love how you put that, because I think about that a lot, actually, and I think that it really puts in context, you know, sort of where these guys are. I think that it's hard, because I think Knicks and Penix at the end of last year, you know, in the postseason, their all-star circuit and the combine stuff was kind of touch and go. But I honestly think they would be both behind everybody who went in the first round last year. I mean, maybe Cam Ward would be in front of Penix, maybe Shador too. I don't know. It would be pretty close with him and Nix and Penix. But like, they would certainly be behind, you know, Caleb, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, obviously, and then McCarthy, I think, as well. So they're, you know, they're like top 25 players, but I can't say that they're top 10 or top 5 players, but it's just, you know, the quarterback situation is what it is.
When you look at Abdul Carter, is this shoulder injury any concern for his status as being maybe the best player in this draft, mm-hmm. or is, from everything you gather, it's just it's an injury that should just be healed and should be good to go come, you know, training camp?
Yeah, I don't think we've heard anything, you know, extensive that's going to be something that lingers beyond, you know, whatever's happening right now. And, you know, obviously I think that when you look at everything else that he does, you know, from a testing standpoint and everything he does physically, athletically, everything else, he's also barely 20 years old. He's so young. That, yeah, I think that that's probably just a bump in the road situation. Although, you know, that's why, you know, we'll see what happens here, right? I mean, if there's, you know, we'll find out, I guess, if there's anything more to it. But I don't think that, you know, we've heard too much on that. I think for the most part, people are still, you know, viewing him as they have, you know, for the last few months.
Nick, something that has started to annoy me, and I don't know, maybe this is just because of where we are in the calendar. When did we decide that not working out at the combine was all of a sudden news again? Because I was like, they haven't been doing this for at least a decade, if not more, and all of a sudden it's like we're trying to make this into news. And I'm very confused by this.
Yeah, so I think that the situation now has become, you know, because last year the difference was Caleb Williams and Daniels and Drake May didn't do any medicals. They didn't do any anything at all here. I think they maybe measured, and that was it.
Yeah.
And
I do need hand. Said, I need to be clear. As a former bad quarterback, I need hand sizes because I had a small hand, and I know that if you got any kind of weather, ball slipping out of your hand.
Right. So a lot of the guys at the top that, you know, and it's, I think it'll be the same for Cam Ward and Shador Sanders this week. It's like if you're only hearing from teams in the top 12 and nobody else, that probably means that's where you're going to go. And there's no reason for you to do testing for everyone in the league and do it for the teams that you're going to specifically meet. So I think that's been the recent change with the quarterbacks. And I think like Marvin Harrison Jr. last year did the same thing. He didn't do anything. So it depends on sort of how good you are. Like, I don't think I would be shocked a little bit if Travis Hunter did much this week. I don't know why he would. Eshton Jainty's not going to do much. So it's gone beyond quarterbacks, I guess, is the difference. And it really has brought up the question of, like, how valuable is the combine? Like, do we really need this? Do we really need a week of this when they have GPS data and everything else nowadays? So I think it's a fair question, and the selfies is something that the agents have caught up to, and, you know, they hold a little bit of that leverage as well.
What do we expect from Travis Hunter, and is he definitely going to be defensive back? Have we heard from him and what he wants to do? Yeah. He's kind of, you know, obviously he was a unicorn, wins the Heisman Trophy, you know, does it all at Colorado. But, Nick, I fully anticipate that's not going to happen in the NFL. So what have you heard about Travis Hunter? Do teams look at him more as a DB? Are there any teams that are curious as looking at him as a wide receiver? What do we expect from Travis Hunter?
Yeah, so I think it depends on the team. Like, you know, Cleveland, Andrew Berry was up today, and he talked and sort of implied that they see Hunter as more of a receiver. And I think that has to do with their roster. They have, you know, they're deeper at corner right now. They don't have as big a need there. So I wonder if it depends by the team, and I think it probably will depend, you know, for the most part, you know, especially the teams at the top, you know, what they have and what they, you know, are feeling. But at the end of the day, I still think it would be an error not to start him out as a full-time corner, allow him to learn, you know, that position, you know, the finer points of it, and really expert himself at that craft. And then if you want to use him as a package receiver, I think you can do that. It'd be harder to do that the other way around. And I think that to get the most out of him, you make him a defender and you see what he can do on offense. As far as his preference, I don't know that he's said. I think he's kind of said, like, I'll do whatever. And if I could play both, that'd be great too. But I think he's a pretty down-to-earth guy in that sense. I don't think he'll be asking to do things that are crazy. But I do think it'll depend on the team he goes to for the most part.
Has Ja'Marr Chase maybe change the way that we think about Travis? Because I think initially most everyone's like, well, if you're going to take someone that high, he better be a number one receiver.
And yeah, better we be still Randy Moss.
Yeah, he better be Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, look like the physical mm-hmm. freak. And now we've started to see more receivers that are, you know, roughly his profile be true number ones. Like, could that factor in as well?
So, yeah, I think so. And I think that it's important to note, like, he's still young. Travis Hunter's, you know, I don't know if he's 21. He might barely be. But, like, he could still get stronger. I think he will. I think the big thing at Colorado, he played so much, I think it was hard for him to keep weight on. I think that he'll have a chance to get stronger, you know, better in terms of tackling, blocking, I guess, on offense if he wants to do that. So I think that that's the appeal on offense, yes, is that he could bulk himself up heavier, and he already has, you know, the ball skills. His ball skills are better than most corners in the NFL right now. Like, that's the, you know, so it's at that level. So I definitely think that he has all the skills to do it. It would just be, are you getting the most out of him by playing him there when you could have him on the other side as well?
You know, going back to Tennessee at one, and it feels like it's a big question mark, and maybe we get a little bit more of the rumors coming out this week out there at the combine, Nick. But when you look at who it could be, whether it be Abdul Carter going one or the go quarterback, do you think there are teams that are going to put, is, I guess I'll circle, I'll change it up. Is Tennessee going to be looking to shop this pick? And do you think there's going to be interest? Does a team like, you know, Jeffrey's Giants,
no,
or
please, I want to trade back,
or the Raiders or someone like that could look to get up to one to get that franchise-changing quarterback in their eyes? Is this pick for sale? Because last year we found out number one, number two, and number three were not for sale.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably for sale. I think they certainly would like to trade it if they could. I think both them and Cleveland would love to do that. It's Cleveland more so. I think Cleveland really kind of needs to. They've been strapped for picks the last couple of years with the Watson mess. But, like, I think that it's going to be hard, I think, to do it, because unless a team, you know, because I think it might be, do you want to trade up for Abdul Carter? Do you want to trade up for Travis Hunter? Because I'm not sure that you're going to get a team to go all in on Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders at one. Like, I just, maybe, but I haven't gotten that sense that anybody loves either of those guys enough to just be like, we're selling the farm, we're going to get them, we're going to make sure, you know, that we get the guy that, I just haven't sensed that to this point. So I think that one and two might be tricky, because, you know, Tennessee could take anything. They don't need to take a quarterback. They could do, you know, any number of things. I think teams know that. Same thing with Cleveland. They know that. So I don't know. I don't know how that'll all work out, but I don't get a sense that it's, you know, imminent or anything that they have any kind of leverage on that. I think they'd really have to work hard at it. And then maybe a team would have to just completely fall in love with, like, if the Raiders were like, we cannot have we cannot go on without him. We have to have him. That would be, you know, a case, but I just don't think that's going to happen. I mean, the Raiders and Giants are the teams up there that need a quarterback, and I think reasonably both of them might be able to just sit there and get them. So we'll see how it happens, but yeah, I think they'll try, but I think it's going to be kind of hard for Tennessee maybe to move that.
Weirdly, is Matthew Stafford's future more interesting than Cam and Shador's?
I think it is a little bit right now, because I think the Giants, this has been floated here the last couple of days, like the Giants have kicked the tires on him. I think somebody reported the Giants asked on Stafford before last year even. So I think that they are super interested. And it wouldn't shock me if the Jets have a similar, you know, interest in him, on account of, you know, the Jets have more weapons probably than the Giants. And you have a situation in New York with the Giants where, you know, the GM and the head coach need to win. Neither Cam nor Shedeur is like a slam dunk to be ready to go next year. And it's just, you know, what do you want to do here? And you have to have a quarterback. So a lot of it's going to depend on Stafford. I think that's one of the most fascinating questions right now, you know, in football. Does he stay there? Does he retire? You know, I don't know. Well, so I think that's certainly something to be talked about.
Along the same lines, this is what I struggle with. Okay, if you tell me that the way that it ended in Minnesota, the Vikings decide, hey, JJ had another, you know, the setback with the injury, we're still not ready to go all in on that. Yeah. If you tell me they want to go make a move for Stafford, I can see where that raises Stafford's eyebrows. But if I'm sitting there going, it's the Giants, or go and figure out a deal with the Rams, how on earth is the Giants the right answer? And I'm saying this is Giants. Like, There's no way. Like, the roster's so bad.
I know. They don't have... So that's why I've said, like, if anybody in New York would be able to pull it, I think it'd be the Jets, and I don't even know if they'd be able to do it because they have more to work with right now.
Right.
And, yeah, he's in a situation where I think he's like, I want $50 million. I'm not gonna budge. And I think the Rams might more than likely end up just giving it to him at the end. I think right now they're sort of just, we're going to kick the tires, and if this is awkward between us, then whatever. But we're going to see what happens here, and if anything happens, we'll address it then. But my guess is that he's back with the Rams next season. That'd be my just hunch as of right now. I don't think that they've, you know, made any concrete, you know, decisions one way or the other on that. So, but it's definitely something to, you know, Pittsburgh too would be another one to think about for him as well.
Nick, outside of Shador and Cam, you know, we're in that fun part of the year where we're going to start hearing about Milroe. We're going to start hearing about McCord, Jackson Dart. You know, these guys, they're pretty close to Shador. And I always have a, you know, especially, you know, my other job working at a gambling network, we always laugh at how many people bring up, well, you know, if they draft him in the first round, they get a fifth-year option. Right. And we kind of like to go against that from a betting standpoint because you're going to hear that. You know, hey, they might not like Jackson Dart now, but they get the fifth-year option. Where are we on the other quarterbacks? Because it's pretty safe to say Cam and Shador are going to be first-round picks.
Right.
And I look, full disclosure, I was in the straight-up camp. Bo Nix is not a first-round pick. He's not going in the first round.
No,
lo and behold, he goes number 12, right? Yeah. So I was wrong there.
Totally with you, yeah.
But it feels like it would be quite the stretch at this point to see another quarterback go in the first round. What have we heard about the other quarterbacks, and are any of them kind of having that buzz where they could maybe sneak into the discussion for the first day?
Yeah, not yet. You know, the Senior Bowl did not do anybody any favors. McCord threw really well at the Shrine Bowl. Like, I think Kyle McCord has actually helped himself so far, maybe more than any of those other guys in that group. But like right now, I don't think that there's another first round pick. Like, you know, at the, like when the All-Star game started, there was some buzz, like maybe, you know, Milroe, if he can come here to the Senior Bowl and like be competent to a degree, then maybe just because he's so physically talented, you know, maybe a team like Pittsburgh would stash him and see what happens with Fields. Like that wouldn't shock me if that happened. Like Milroe was kind of the only guy that I would think that might be able to sneak in there. Yeah, I've heard people talk about Jackson Dart. I don't see that at all. I think I'd have him even below McCord, quite frankly, at this point. But I think most of those guys, Tyler Shuck, the kid from Louisville, they're all like, you know, high floor, low ceiling, you know, maybe a good long-term backup, maybe a guy that could get you through a stretch here or there. But like, there's just not anybody that's overwhelmingly like, wow, like we got to get this guy. But there's also like, there's a lot of teams after those first two that do need quarterback help, whether it's another starter or another backup or whatever it is. So I think we'll see a bunch of them drafted, but there's not a lot of them that are slam dunks, that's for sure.
We're talking to Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic. Along those same lines, I thought it was kind of interesting last year where we have, what was it, we had six go in the first 12 picks, right?
Yeah.
Six quarterbacks go in the first.
Six and 12, yep.
And then I believe the next quarterback taken was Spencer Rattler in the sixth.
Right.
Is that right? So,
yeah.
Honestly, though, that kind of logically makes sense to me.
Right, exactly. They waited, right? Yeah.
Well, and on top of that, it's like, you know what I can find? If I'm a team that has holes, I can find guys that are going to play. I can find a guard. I can find, you know, a inside linebacker. I can find guys that are maybe not valued positions, but guys that will give me a lot of snaps versus I'm stashing this guy maybe for development, maybe for a rainy day, whatever the case may be. But I'm intentionally stating I'm not drafting this guy to play him.
Right.
I'm curious to know if that holds true this year, because I don't know how much of that was based on the amount of first-round quarterbacks versus the quarterback class. We're also seeing more of kind of those mid-round, what we would traditionally think of as mid-round quarterbacks. They're kind of going back to school, and they're getting paid to do that. And so I'm kind of watching all that. How do you see this shaping out?
Yeah, I think that it's going to be really interesting because I think normally we see the second tier of quarterbacks or the second wave. It becomes like a game of chicken where, you know, the handful of teams that still need a quarterback, they're just sort of waiting to see who takes the first one, who takes the next one, and then maybe there's a run because teams panic, and then we see some teams trade up or whatever. But like this year, there are so many teams that need a quarterback right now, like that need, even if it's a backup, that, you know, need to draft a quarterback, like for one reason or another, that I can't see it it lasting as long as last year's did. Like, last year's gap there surprised me that we waited that long for Rattler to go off. Like, I feel like you'll see more guys go on day two this year, maybe towards the bottom of three anyway. But, like, I think that there's just too many teams out there that could use a guy. And there are, you know, a good amount of guys that are worth, you know, kicking the tires on, I guess I would say. There's not a lot that, you know, overly excite you, but there's enough in here that, you know, maybe we could see it if we can work them with the right guys. So I think there's a lot of teams that need quarterbacks this year. I don't think that we'll see a big, you know, wide range. And I think it'll be a good number that go, because there's a lot of them that are right on that, you know, they're good enough, but not quite, you know, to a level that you'd write home about. So I think there'll be a lot that go. I'm not sure quite where they'll all fall yet.
Nick, it feels like we had, based off of free agency, it was the resurgence of the running back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs in Green Bay, and then, of course, Saquon Barkley finishes, I believe, third in MVP. So I say that to look at Ashton Jeanty. What do you think the ceiling is for him? You know, how high could he go? Because he's a stud, and we saw this past year, you know, running backs maybe, they're hot right now. So could we see Ashton Jeanty? For a while, we weren't seeing running backs go in the first round. Now mm-hmm. I'm wondering, how high could he go in the first round?
Yeah, I definitely think in a draft like this, where it's a real big preference draft, where teams have different, you know, ideas of their boards, it would not shock me at all if he's a top 10 pick. He's definitely a first round pick. I think again, this is another year where we could see multiple running backs go in the first round. Even like Jeanty, I think, is a top 10, certainly a top 15 player. Maybe top five on some people's boards just because he's done so much. But you've got other guys like Caleb Johnson from Iowa, Amorian Hampton from North Carolina. They could also slip in. So this is a really good running back class across the board. So this will be another one of those years where the positional value people maybe aren't so happy with it all.
All right, last question. Is this a good draft?
You know, I had somebody put it to me several months ago that it's a weird draft or an annoying draft in some ways, because I think it is. I think that there's quality here.
There's obviously always going to be great players, no matter what you think of a draft. Like I know, but it feels very lack of buzzy. But I can't tell if that's just quarterbacks, because even like with the Kenny Pickett draft, where it wasn't a quarterback buzzy draft, it still felt like it had a little more juice than this.
Yeah, there's not a ton of like write home about guys that you say that guy is for sure a top five draft pick. There's just not that many. Like in years past, you've said that about like maybe 12 guys sometimes, where you say that guy could go, you know, that high. That's not the case this year at all. I think it's you know, you've got some guys at the top, and then it weakens out pretty quick. But I think when you get into the mid rounds, there are a lot of, you know, really intriguing guys that need some work, that are kind of rough around the edges. There's a lot of talent in this draft, but it's, you know, it definitely is one of those where you're going to have to coach it up. You're going to have to make sure you get them at the right spot and not panic or reach for anybody or do anything crazy. And that's why the quarterback thing right now is so delicate, because they kind of are a microcosm for the class. They're nice players, but they're not, you know, there's a lot of questions there, and the bust rate could be kind of high.
Nick, you're great to join us. We really appreciate it.
You bet. Anytime.
Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic. When we come back, let's get into the list. We've got open jobs. Jeff Borzello over at ESPN has written about the open jobs that we've been talking about, so I want to discuss that. Also, a big-time hire.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.